Now we shine your shoes like a looking gloss. When that water hit them shoes, it roll right off. Shine. Now we shine that shoe like a looking glass, make a fly through that door, not too late, shine. Now we get that shoe like a looking cloth, the water hit them, they're gonna roll right off, shine. Now we put them shoes right on the lid, when you know them shoes gonna shine, they're gonna glitch. Now we hit them shoes like a looking glass, them shoes gonna do the natural life, shine. Now we gonna hit them shoes like a looking glass, when that water hit them, they gonna roll out or shine.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Dawid Yako Maccabeus. The show is entitled Signs and Wonders, and today's date is October 10th, 2010, 10 o'clock on the 10th month. That's a lot of 10s. You know, it would be a major event if October wasn't the 8th month and not the 10th month. The real 10th month is December, of course. So, based on the Gregorian calendar, we're not really at the 10, 10, 10, 10. But anyway, I mean, the Gregorian calendar says we're at 10, 10, 10, 10. Anyway, you know, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say, last Wednesday, I tried to do the show, and as I was speaking, the volume just went out, it faded out, and then I talked for 2 hours. And there was no show. So I entertained myself. So I'm going to actually, I have another computer here, and I'm going to see if I hear myself. And yeah, okay. All right, I hear myself. So that means you can hear me. All right, now let's begin. All right, today's program is called The Covenant and the Egyptian Book of the Dead, Watcher File 2. Okay? Now, this show, it's actually good that I didn't do it last week because, I mean, on Wednesday, because I had to rush through it because I noticed I ran out of time. And I don't want to break this up into two parts. I just want to do one part. And I want I want to make sure that everything that I say here, it's like food for you. And there's some things that I discovered, a few months ago. And I'm actually going to use those things that I discovered in this broadcast. But before I start, I want to tell you, I actually created a new page on my website. The website is called HebrewIsraelites.eu. That's HebrewIsraelites.eu. And on this website, I have another page. It's called the resource page. And you can go to the resource page, and you can use that resource page actually while we're speaking. And I have on there a couple of the books that I'm going to reference. I have PDF books, and they're the Book of Yasser. There's I actually have the Quran on there. I have the Bible. I have the Apocrypha, where you can find the Book of Maccabees. All these things are available, but if you needed to find them, you can go on my resource page. You can look on there, and I also have a ancient character graph there, and this ancient character is of the ancient Hebrew. So you can go there and actually see the ancient Hebrew characters. All right. Now, of course, before we begin, I need to open up with a word of prayer, and this way the show can go off without a hitch. Now, this prayer is based around this particular study today, which is the covenant. And I worded this prayer so it could, the prayer could basically help us get away from the curses that have come upon us, because we do not understand why we are in the state we are in. There's so many things I want to say, and I need to... Okay, let me just get going. Okay, let's say this prayer. Now, Heavenly Father, I come to you with a humble heart in the name of your gift, your promise, Yahushua, the Messiah. I pray to you, I pray that you guide me and bless me with your spirit during this broadcast. I also pray for the sake of your peculiar treasure, your chosen people. And what I pray, Heavenly Father, is that you bind the spirit of dumbness, reverse the results of slowness of learning and understanding. Make our minds strong and powerful. Give us the ability of intellectual acuity, sharpness of mind. Heavenly Father, release the spirit of acuteness and give us a quick, penetrating intellect. I pray, Heavenly Father, that you give us back the ability to resolve fine details in your word. Give us extreme sharpness and intense awareness so we can overcome the curse of Hosea 4:6. As it states in your word, Father, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me, seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy Yah. I will also forget thy children. Place the law back into our memory, Father. Place your memory back in our hearts and in our minds. Please do not forget us, Father, but forgive us. Father, if it be your will, forgive our forefathers for rejecting knowledge. Make us your priest, Father, priest of the Most High, Hayah Hayah. Place the law back into our hearts and remember your covenant that you made with our forefathers in the day of Moshe. As you said to Moshe, thus thou shalt say to the house of Jacob and tell the children of Israel, ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. O Father, how I pray that we can once again be your peculiar treasure and priest of your word. I pray in the name of your son, your gift, Yahushua, the Messiah. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Okay, thank you so much for letting me go over my prayer. Like I always say, it gives me a boost of energy and lets me know that things can go off without a hitch. Now, before I start this broadcast, I first would like to thank you for tuning in or downloading this broadcast. I suggest you download it because the power of learning is repetition, and sometimes you have to hear something a few times before you get it. Now, from time to time, okay, I like to give a few things that I have discovered during my awakening process. And one of these things was something called the Los Lunas Decalogue. Now, I want you to know this was a last-minute addition to the study because I was going to have another discussion on Ruddy because I didn't really complete the explanation of the word Ruddy. And if to recall, I was speaking about how the Anglo-Saxon Protestant took this word and replaced ruddy with a word that was actually a Hebrew word, which was meaning of blood, and blood meaning an Adam, and Adam to represent the first man, and representing power and fertility and all these things. But I don't have much time to go through that again, so I'm not going to do it this time. But I am going to go over the Los Lunas Decalogue. Now, this is extremely profound, okay, if you can grasp this. Now, I'm asking you to please open your eyes. Please open your ears to what I'm about to say. All right? This stone, called the Las Lulas Decalogue, was written for this moment that you are about to hear right now. All right? Now you ask, what is the Las Lulas Decalogue? Okay. This is a stone that was discovered in New Mexico. Now, what makes it special is that the stone had the Ten Commandments written in Paleo Hebrew. Okay, that's the Paleo Hebrew language. It was written on it. Now, the date of the inscription of the stone was between 500 to 1,000 years old. Okay, put that in your mind, 500 to 1,000 years old. All right. Now, the funny thing about the stone is that because it was discovered by, Professor Massa, he decided to build this theory around who was it that wrote on the stone. Now, they say that it was the Vikings, the Native Americans, pre-Columbian Saxon sailors, and on and on and on. You know the deal. All right. Now, this is what Wikipedia says about this particular stone. It says, the Las Lulas Decalogue stone is a large boulder on the side of a hidden mountain near Las Lulas, New Mexico, about 35 miles south of Albuquerque, that bears a very large inscription carved into a flat panel. The stone is also known as the Las Lulas Mystery Stone or Commandment Rock. The inscription is interpreted to be an abridged version of the Decalogue of the Ten Commandments, and a form of Paleo-Hebrew, a letter group resembling the tetragram YHWH or Yahweh, makes four appearances. The stone is controversial in that some claim the inscription is pre-Columbian and therefore proof of early Semitic contact with the Americans. Now, keep in mind how Wikipedia writes this, okay? It goes, the first recorded mention of the stone is in 1933 when Professor Frank Heben, an archaeologist from the University of New Mexico, saw it. Heben was led to the stone by an unknown guide who claimed to have found it as a boy in the 1880s. The 1880s date of the discovery is important to those who believe the stone was inscribed by a lost tribe of Israel. The Paleo-Hebrew inscription is particularly identical to the Phoenician scripts, which was known at the time, thus not precluding the possibility of fraud. One argument against the stone antiquity is its apparent use of the modern Hebrew punctuation. Though amateur epigrapher Barry Fell argued that the punctuation is consistent with antiquities. Other researchers dismissed the inscriptions based on the numerous stylistic and grammatical errors that appear in inscriptions. Now, the reason why I read the Wikipedia explanation is because they want to discredit this. And the reason why they want to discredit it is you will find out. Okay? Now, the stone was abridged to tell a story. You know, and abridged means, you know, specially edited. Now, let me, I'm going to read something for you. And this is what was written on the stone. Okay. Now, there are parts that are taken out of it. Now, this deals with the covenant. Okay. This deals with the covenant. Now, this is really important. There's parts on the stone that was actually taken out. Now, I want you to pay attention to the parts that were taken out because this is going to tie this all together when I get to my explanation. All right? Now, on the stone, which is they call it the Ten Commandment Rock, all right, it says, I am Hayah Thayah, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of bondage. Right? That's in there. That's on the stone. Now, it says, thou shalt is taken out. Not have no other gods before me. Alright, I'm going to explain this later. Thou shalt was taken out. Now, the next commandment, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images. On the rock, taken out, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, on that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the waters under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down to thee, to them, nor serve them, for I, thy Most High, am a jealous Yah, visiting the iniquities of the fathers upon the children, upon the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. All that taken out. All right. Now, next one. Thou shalt not take the name of the Most High Yah in vain. On the rock, taken out of the rock, for Yah will not hold thee guiltless that taketh his name in vain. All right. Now that was taken out. Now, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That was on the rock. What was taken out is 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the whole of the Most High, thy Yah, in it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughters, thy maid servants, nor thy maid service, nor thy cattle, nor thy strangers that is within thy gates, for in 6 days the Most High made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Most High blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Now, all that was taken out. Okay? Pay attention to manservants and maidservants. It's going to be important later. Now, the rest was written. Okay? The rest of it says, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land with thy Most High, thy Yah give thee. And then we have, thou shalt not kill, there. Thou shalt not commit adultery, there. Thou shalt not steal, there. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbors, there. Now, here's where it gets a little interesting. Now, a lot interesting. The last commandment, he says, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, taken out, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass. Now, he puts this on a rock, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. Okay? Basically, anything to do with slavery is omitted from the commandments. Now, remember, he wrote this on the rock, and he omitted these things to bring your attention to the things that were omitted. All right? Now, in Wikipedia, they're like, oh, this must have been an amateur. But no, this man is telling a story. Now, listen to what the story is. All right? Now, this was found on a website, and I have this link to my resources page. You can actually read it. But this is the explanation of the person that found this, the person who wrote this article. This is his explanation. He says, Commandment 2 and 4 sustain the most editing, all right? 2 and 4, which is, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images, and thou shalt not take the name in vain. It says, 2 and 4, remember the Sabbath day. He goes, they contain the most editing. These two commandments have huge, highly priestly signatures and have the highest amount of surgical omissions. Is that yet another indicator that the author is not a scribe or priestly orator? I think it is of interest that the mention of male and female servants, male and female slaves mentioned in two commandments are omitted. Mm-hmm. The slavery omission, I find, has a highly signature here. He does not use the word tresvadim in reference of the house of slavery in Egypt. Any other reference to slavery is totally dropped. The word for male slave that is omitted is from the same root tesvadak, your male slave, and vamataka, female slave. Is there a difference in remembering the Egyptian house of slavery and the other two use of slaves in the divine injunction? Then he writes, one cannot help beg the question, is the author here free? Basically, is the author here free? And he says, is this freedom free from old world servitude, slavery, and now liberated once in the new world? Though the commandment use of slavery, is he conscious of this in his slavery omission? If this is as old as the inscriptions on the stone, then whoever it is, he is overly aware of who is free and who is enslaved. All right. If we consider one post theory, okay, this is their theory. This is the theory of the oppressor, that This pre-Columbian party voyage into the Gulf and up the Rio Grande, more than likely, those who did the rowing did not do so via voluntarily. Right? Altruism, slaves, he goes, altruism, he goes, basically, slaves rowed. Right? Then he writes, in line two, he omits a small thing, but at the same time, a pretty significant possession phrase, very common in Hebrew. Lika is a pronunciation to you. In the context, the sentence, it is, and shall not be to your gods, and one, or other ones, before my face. You wonder if Hebrew is his language by faith, conviction, but not in native language. So basically, I know that last one was kind of confusing. He was wondering why he left out to you in reference to gods. Okay? Now, the reason why they don't understand this, okay? The reason why they don't understand this is because they don't understand who the Hebrew Israelites are. So they're confused or they're trying to mislead you. All right, now listen to this. And his conclusions are this. He says, a critical abridgment question would be, if we assume the author went by memory, then what had he memorized? The complete version of Exodus 20, 1 through 17? If this abridgment originated from ritual recitation and lyrical practice, would you not think the entire text would be recited rather than any abridgment? Two, and would certainly think that the full text of Commandments 2 and 4 would especially be prized memory pieces to be fully recalled in a congressional setting or temple or in the synagogues. Now, see, confused, all right? Now, like I said before, because these people are coming from a place of deceptive ignorance, they could never understand what the meaning of the stone is, okay? And they don't even understand what this stone represents. Now, what I did, I had to test to see if I was still on, because, you know, maybe they be shutting the brother off, so I got to make sure I could hear myself. All right, now what I did was I put a few points here. Just in case y'all aren't following along with me, in case some of y'all are still confused, a.k.a. white supremacist, a.k.a. oppressors, I'm going to tell y'all what this stone means. This is another treat for you, okay? I see how you got you guys out here wondering, oh, what is going on? But let me tell you. Pull up a chair, grab some coffee. All right, check it out. Now, here are a few points that I would bring to light. The first is this. The stone is dated 500 to 1,000 years old. Now, all y'all get out your calculator. Now, subtract 500 from 2010. All right? 500 for 2010. You would get a date of 1510, correct? Now, Columbus came to America in 1492. Slavery started in 1452. Under Pope Nicholas V. Right? Now, when he issued the papal bull, it's called Dum Diversius, you know, we were already about 58 years into slavery at this point. All right? Now, 58 years. Think about 58 years. Right, 58 years ago, a man wasn't even on the moon. 58 years ago, a man by the name of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X was still alive. 58 years ago, we couldn't vote. So 58 years is a lot of time. Right? Now, do you think Christopher Columbus would use slaves to row to America, or would he pay sailors? Now, have you ever heard of a thing called the transatlantic slave trade? All right? Now, I have on the web here, it says what was going on. Now, I estimated 1510, right, if you take 500. If you go back even further, like 1502, it says Juan Seville became the first merchant identified to send slaves to the New World. That was in 1502. Small group of Africans, probably slaves captured from Portugal vessels and brought to King James, Scotland. 1505, first record of sugar cane being made in the New World, meaning the Dominican Republic. 1509, Columbus's son and became governor of Spain Empire. He soon complains that the Native American slaves do not work hard enough. 1510, this is where I put it back, the start of the systematic transportation of African slaves to the new king, the New World. King Fernando of Spain authorized shipment of 50 African slaves to be sent to Santo Domingo. So, now, the author says that the person who was rowing was obviously a slave, and slavery was already in swing, so it doesn't take a genius to put two and two together that the person who wrote on the rock was a slave that was brought over on the ship. And isn't it a miracle that it still is a rock in New Mexico? Now, another point. Like I said before, is it far-fetched to think that an African slave would travel through New Mexico, the same place that is screaming about immigration today? Remember, they bought slaves through the Gulf of Mexico. Now, if you were to escape, where would you go? I mean, they were sailors, right? He was rowing. What's the Gulf to a person that's enslavement? See, now the author of the Discovery is confused about, you know, why the author of the Decalogue Stone was so adamant about talking about slavery. And even he comes to the conclusion that the author of the stone was a slave. Okay? Now my final point is, you know, why this is so profound. First of all, look at what was omitted. This is telling you that the author, okay, the author of this rock broke the covenant. Okay? You were enslaved because you broke the covenant. And if the slave that wrote on this rock was an African slave thrown on the ship back in 1492, then the slave was Hebrew Israelite, which will fulfill the prophecy of Deuteronomy 28. And those of y'all don't understand Deuteronomy 28, let me refresh your memory. Okay? Now listen to the curses. Deuteronomy 28:48. Therefore shall thou serve thine enemies, which the Most High shall send against thee, in hunger, and in thirst, and in nakedness, and in want of all things, and he shall put a yoke of iron upon thy neck until he had destroyed thee. Deuteronomy 28:49. The Most High shall bring a nation against thee from afar, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand. Deuteronomy 28:50. A nation of fierce countenance shall not regard thy person of the old, nor show favor to the young. 64. And the Most High shall scatter thee. What was that? And the Most High shall scatter thee amongst all people from the one end of the earth even unto the other, and thou shalt serve other gods, okay, which neither thou nor thy father have known, even wood and stone. In 68. And the Most High shall bring thee into Egypt again with ships. Hello? What did they do? They rode to the New World. How did they row to the New World? They rowed with what? Ships. Now, what does Egypt mean? Egypt means bondage. You know, you can walk to Egypt. You ain't got to row to Egypt. Wake up, everybody. Wake up. By the way, wherefore I speak unto thee, thou shalt see it no more, and there ye shall be sold unto your enemies, for bondman and bondwoman, and no man shall buy you. And no man shall buy you. What does that mean? They ain't going to buy you from your people. They're just going to take you. They ain't going to buy you. They're going to take you and sell you to themselves. Right? Wake up. Now, I'll read that because this stone is significant. Damn, move it. The stone is 18 tons, located in New Mexico. All right? It's been there 500 years. The slave that wrote on that stone was a Hebrew Israelite to tell you a story. And I'm going to tell you the story he was trying to tell you. Okay? I'm going to tell you the story that this brother was trying to tell you today. Now, what is the covenant? All right? Because we got to understand what this covenant is. Because it's very important. Now, answer. A covenant is an agreement between two parties. There are two types of covenants, conditional and unconditional. A conditional or bilateral covenant is an agreement that is binding on both parties for its fulfillment. Both parties agree to fulfill certain conditions. If each party fails to meet their responsibilities, the covenant is broken and neither party has to fulfill the expectations of the covenant. An unconditional or unilateral covenant is an agreement between two parties, but only one of the two parties has to do something. Nothing is required of the other party. Now, the covenant with Noah in Genesis 9. I'm going to read over a couple covenants so you can actually understand what a covenant is. And who was the covenant for? All right, now the first one. Now it reads in Genesis 9. It says, and this is a covenant for everybody. It says, and Yah spoke unto Noah and to his sons with him, saying, and I, behold, I set up my covenant with you and with your seed after you and with every living creature that is with you, of the fowl, of the cattle, of the and of every beast of the earth with you, for all that go out of the ark, to every beast of the earth. And I will establish my covenant with you, neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of a flood, neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. Okay? And Yah said, this is the token of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, rainbow, and I shall be for, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the water shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh, and the bow shall be in the clouds, and I will look upon it, and I will remember the everlasting covenant between Yah and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. And Yah said unto Noah, this is the token of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. Now, that was the first covenant between Moshe. All right? Now, the Abrahamic covenant in Genesis 15. Okay, in Genesis 15. It says, now this is the covenant between Abraham. First was the covenant between Noah, and that was between the earth. No more water, no more flood, the covenant. All right, now the second covenant is between Abraham. Now listen to this one. It says, and he said unto Abraham, know of a surety that the seed shall be a stranger in the land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. How many years? 400 years. How many years were they in Egypt? How many years? Was it 400? I think it was shy. A little bit shy. All right? Do some research on the book of Yasser. I got it on the resource page. You can look it up yourself. And also, that nation whom they shall serve will I judge. And afterwards shall they come out with great substance. And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace. Thou shalt be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation thou shalt come hither again. For the iniquities of the Amorites is not yet full. And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and in the same day, here's the covenant, the Most High made a covenant with Abraham, and actually Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land for the river Egypt, unto the river, unto the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites, and the Kenizzites, and the Kedemites, and the Hittites, and the Perizzites, and the Rephaims, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Gishites, and the Jebusites. All right? This speaks about the covenant when the Most High made. This speaks about Abraham, right? When the Most High made a covenant with him concerning the future seed of Israel. Now, this was an unconditional covenant to be fulfilled. Now, it's unconditional, meaning like Abraham didn't have to do anything because he said, look, I'm going to give this to your seed. Okay? Now, here is where the covenant that I want to bring to your attention. Okay? This is the covenant of Moshe and the children of Israel. Now, first of all, I want to give you a little treat here. The name of Israel. During my research, I found what the name Israel means. Now, a lot of us believe that the name means he who wrestles with God. I mean, he who wrestles with Yah. Now, I believe that that's a meaning, but there's, you know how Hebrews have dual meanings for things. One of the other meanings is he turns the head of Yah. All right? So when you say he wrestles with Yah, okay, you can say that, you know, they're speaking about a relationship, right? If you're wrestling with Yah and you turn the head of Yah, then that means there's actual a special relationship between these people in the Most High. All right? So what was the covenant between Moshe and Israel? All right, part one of the agreement. Here's the covenant. And this is unabridged, its entirety. All right. In the third month, when the children of Israel was going forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai, for they were departed from Rephidim, and were come to the desert of Sinai, and had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mount. And Moses went up unto the Most High, Yah, and Yah called unto him out of the mountain, saying, Thou shalt thou say unto the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice of covenant, and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure, here we go, unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests, hello, and a holy nation. Mm-hmm. There are, and it says, these are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. And Moses came and called for the elders of the people, and laid before their faces all these words. What words? These words that were spoken of, which the Most High commanded him. And all of the people answered together, and all said, Yah hath spoken, we will do. There you go. The covenant was made. What they say? They said, Yah has spoken, we will do. There's an agreement. All right, that's the agreement. And Moshe returned the words of the people to the Most High. So they're telling you how this is working here, right? Now, part two, here's details of the agreement. What are the details of the agreement? 10 commandments. And Yah spake all these words, saying, I am Hayah, Thy Yah, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Then here we go. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the waters under the earth. Mm-hmm. Thou shalt not bow down to thee, bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Most High, am a jealous Yah, visiting the iniquities of the forefathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me, and keep my commandments. Thou shalt not take the name of the Most High Yah in vain, for Hayah will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Most High thy Yah. In it thou shalt not do any work, thy nor thy sons, nor thy daughters, nor thy manservants, nor thy maidservants, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in the 6 days the Most High made heaven and earth and the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore, the Most High blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Then he goes, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long on the land which the Most High, thy Yah, giveth thee. All right, now, pay attention to these last parts, right? Because I'm going to bring this up when I speak about the Egyptian Book of the Dead. The Egyptian Book of the Dead. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbors, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's, thou shalt not covet anything that is thy neighbor, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor thy manservice, nor thy maidservice, nor thy oxen, nor his ass, nor all these things that is thy neighbor's, and all the people with thy okay, their neighbors, boom. Then it says, and all the people saw the thundering and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they removed and stood afar. And they said unto Moses, thou with us, and we will hear. He goes, speak thou with us, and we will hear. But not the Most High Yah speak with us, lest we die. Moses said unto the people, fear not. For Yah is come to prove you, and that his fear may be before your face, that you sin not. You know, they were scared, like, oh, my goodness. But he was like, look, I'm going to make sure y'all hear this. Okay, I'm going to make sure y'all hear this. And they were scared and wanting to hide. And Moses was like, look, man, they're just trying to prove you. Just trying to prove you. Okay, now, what is the testimony? Okay, what is the testimony of the covenant? The covenant is an agreement. Okay, let me break this down. Okay, conclusion of the trying to bring it together. Now, the covenant is an agreement. Okay, and a testimony. Okay, a testimony is evidence of the agreement. So, the Ark of the Covenant held the evidence of the written agreement between Hayah, the Most High, and Israel. So, what did the covenant say? How many of us thought that the Ten Commandments are the covenant? Now, when we read Exodus 34:28, right, and it says, and he was there with the Most High 40 days and 40 nights, and he did neither eat bread nor drink water, and he wrote upon the tables the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. Now, if many of us aren't sharp enough to see that little comma there, meaning there's two things. Is the table of the words of the covenant, comma, the Ten Commandments. Now, there was more items in the Ark of the Covenant, but these items seem to have mysteriously disappeared. Now, here's an example. Okay, and it's in Deuteronomy 31:19. Now, I know there's a lot of verses and stuff. I'm going to break this down later. We're going to get to the book of the Egyptian Book of the Dead, where it's going to pick up a little bit. But I need to lay this down, and I need you guys to download this and listen to it and go over the scriptures and understand that this is a very important piece of why we're up here talking right now and why the world is in the state that it's in, why you hear these people talking about the Hebrew Israelites, and why the United States right now is falling apart. I was just listening to the Alex Jones Show today. And it was a rebroadcast of this lady that lost her child. The police came in and just took her child from her. Okay? Just took it. Made up some charges on her and just took it. And this is not the first time this happened. This happened a lot. Now, I believe that what's happening is America is going to go through the same thing that they put the African slaves through. They would just take our children away from us. All right? Put them to work. You know, just lock us in prison. Think about this now. All this stuff is coming back on your country. You listen to me right now. Your country is going to go through the same thing you put our people through until you acknowledge us who we are. All right, now let me finish. Here's an example. In Deuteronomy 31, about things missing from the ark. All right, in Deuteronomy 31:19, it says, now therefore write ye this song for you and teach it the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths, that this song may be a witness for me unto the children of Israel. For when I shall have brought them into the land which I swear unto their fathers, and that floweth with milk and honey, and they shall have eaten and filled themselves and waxed fat, then will they turn unto other gods and serve them, and provoke me and break my covenant. And it shall come to pass,
when many evils and troubles are befallen them, that the song shall testify against them as a witness, for it shall not be forgotten out of the mouth of their seed. Okay? For I know their imaginations, which they go about even now, before I have brought them into the land, which I swear. Moses therefore wrote this song that same day and taught it to the children of Israel. Okay? Now here's a song. Now listen. And it came to pass when Moses had made an ending of writing the words of the law in a book until they finished that Moses commanded the Levites which bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Most High, saying, take this book of the law and put it in the side of the Ark of the Covenant of the Most High Yah, that it may be there for a witness against thee. Okay? And this book was a poem that explained how the children of Israel would go into bondage. Okay? Now, for some reason, that disappeared. Now, here's an example of that. Now, when we get to Kings 8:9, it says, and it says this, there was nothing in the ark save the two tables of stone which Moses put there at Horeb when the Hayah made a covenant with the children of Israel when they came out of the land of Egypt. All right, so what happened to the song? All right, there should have been the covenant, the commandments, and the song. Many people tell us they were just the commandments. So what happened to the covenant and the song? You understand? There has been some type of manipulation going on here, or someone's trying to hide something. Okay. Now, the question is who took the song? But let me read something to you. Now, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. All right? We have to understand knowledge is power. And power is freedom. Because ignorance is bondage. And our ignorance has destroyed us and enslaved us until this day. Now, before we seek out the meaning of the covenant, okay? Before we seek out the meaning of the covenant, let's break down what is a commandment. All right? Now, I know this is a process here. This is a process, all right? Now, what does the English word say about commandment? Okay, it says this. It says a divine commandment, one of the Ten Commandments of the Old Testament, literally any command. That's it. That's all they say. A divine command, Ten Commandments, any command. That's all they say. You look it up. Look up on the internet or look in a book. They say that, all right? Now, what does the Hebrew or the original Hebrew say? Command. Boom. I broke down the words. Say. Speak. Tell. Okay? Say, speak, tell. In Hebrew, if you look in the Strong Concordance, number 1697, it has a lot of meanings. It says counsel, decree, judgment, duty, message, spoken, talk, task, work, word. Okay? Now, here's a verse that uses that particular commandment. It says, and he was there with the Most High 40 days and 40 nights, and he neither did eat, drink bread, nor water, and he wrote on the table the words of the covenant and the Ten Commandments. That's what that commandment relates to. Now, here's another commandment, 6680, okay? Whether human or divine law ordained, precept, okay? This word can be found in verse 26, and shown unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. The reason I explain this is to show you that there's a difference between a commandment and a covenant. Okay? There's a difference between a commandment and a covenant. In fact, there are three words we should pay attention to, which are covenant, commandment, and testimony. And when you put them together, it reveals this meaning. And it says, the Most High made a covenant in the sight of Moses and the children of Israel, okay? Therefore, they were witnesses, meaning they had the testimony of the covenant, which was an agreement between two parties. Now, in order to keep this agreement came the law, which is the commandments, which are the commandments, which are the commandments, okay? All right? So, if the commandments are not the covenant, then what exactly is the covenant? Now, this is the trillion-dollar question, because the covenant is the reason why we are in the state in which we are in today. Now, I was going to play the song that was placed in the Ark of the Covenant that mysteriously disappeared when King David looked in it, but I think you're going to have to listen to that later, because due to time, I don't want to play that audio file. I was going to take a break here and play the audio file, but I want to just get to the point real quick. All right. Now, here's the first part of the covenant, okay? It says, now listen. It says, Thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then, here we go, here's the covenant, ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. And Moses came and called for the elders of the people, and laid before their face all these words which the Most High commanded. And also, in Deuteronomy 31:19, it reads, for when I shall have brought them into the land which I swear unto their fathers, and flow with milk and honey, and they shall have eaten and filled themselves and waxed fat, then will they turn unto other gods and serve them and provoke me and break my covenant. Okay? So, the covenant was to have land and to be a nation. Not just any nation, but a holy nation of priests. Okay? A holy nation of priests. The covenant was for the children of Israel to be a peculiar treasure unto the Most High above all people. You see, Hebrews, we're supposed to be a sign and a wonder to the world. Why do you think my program is called Signs and Wonders? You think I was going to come out here and talk about space aliens and stuff? No. I ain't talking about no space aliens. I'm talking about what is the purpose? What is signs and wonders? Okay? Now, I was going to break down the Ten Commandments again, but I think you get the point with that. I think you get the point with that. But now, in relationship to the Egyptian Book of the Dead, right, in relationship to that, there's something that I want to bring to your attention. It's the first part of the commandments you have, you know, thou shalt not have any other gods before me. These are really serious. These are serious on how you should, you know, not break the covenant. Now, there's a second set of laws that show you how you should live amongst each other. And these are commandments like thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false against thy neighbors, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. You know what I'm saying? Now, these things, you can find this in any society. Go out there and try to steal something. Go out there and sleep with somebody's wife. See what happens to you. You know what I mean? These are common sense right here. All right? You notice how these were on the stone intact. He's saying these ain't really that important, because you'd have this in every society. This is what makes up a society, following these laws. Okay? Now, the Egyptian Book of the Dead says that, you know, these were stolen. Right? How many times have you heard that? How many times have you heard that the Egyptian Book of the Dead, is the originator of the commandments. You know what? I'm going to break it. I'm going to break this down. But before I do, I'm definitely going to take a break, and I'm going to play something for you. And this is Bill Cosby. And Bill Cosby talks about history. And it's funny that I found this, and I was able to take this from the video that he did. And I'm actually looking for it now. It's called The History, The Negro History, Lost, Stolen, or Strayed. All right, now listen to this real quick, and I'm going to take a break, but then I'll be right back.
Now, what's the whitest thing you know? Whiter than the driven snow, whiter than the whites of your eyes? Sugar. Non-integrated, non-black, sweet sugar. But you see, there is a black man in your sugar. His name is Norbert Rillier. Norbert Rillier in 1846 invented a vacuum pan, revolutionized the sugar refining industry. Now, you have to dig to find that fact. I mean, it's not much history, but it's still history. Now, what do you stand in? In your shoes. Now, there's just you and your shoes, isn't it? Nope. See, there's a black man standing in your Oxfords with you. Sharing your soul and your heel is a man, his name is Jan Ernst Metzelder. And in 1863, this is a drawing by the kids, Metzelder invented the machine that made mass-produced shoes possible. Now, you have to dig around for that fact, too. And again, it's not much history, but it's history. Am I coming in clear to California? I mean, is this TV signal driving through a pass in the Sierra Nevada mountains and slipping into San Francisco? Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Jim Beckworth. Jim Beckworth, out of St. Louis, hunter, trapper, and honorary chief of the Crow Tribe of Indians. We had trouble finding you, Jim. Though you helped open the West, you didn't make the books. Chicago, right here, where the Wrigley Building is. Young fellow by the name of Jean-Baptiste de Sade. Jean-Baptiste, he founded you, Chicago, when he traded with the Indians. And of course, there it is right at that particular time. It was called Eschicago, or Stinking Onion, by the Indians. And de Sade, he didn't even change the name at all. Now you take the Lewis and Clark expedition here, right in there. You'll find a black man named York, helping to open the West. Those men are trying to wash the black out of York. That's what you might call historically significant, because a lot of people think we ought to wash white, but we ain't gonna, you see. Texas. Coming to you, Texas, right down the Chisholm Trail, right here. Right down there with 5,000 black cowboys who never made it to the Hollywood Western. Did you know that, huh? In the same group, there was one black outlaw. His name was Deadwood Dick, who claimed his soul brothers were Bat Masterson, Billy the Kid, and Jesse James. Deadwood Dick used to ride into the saloon, order two drinks, one for himself and one for his horse. And here's his horse drinking a shot of red eye with a straw. And how about the 186,000 blacks who fought on the Union side during the Civil War? 38,000 died. How about Teddy Roosevelt's charge up San Juan Hill? It wasn't just the Rough Riders who made it. Four black regiments went right up with Teddy. They didn't get lost going up the hill. They got lost in the history books. How about the North Pole? Snow White? Well, the first man there was black, Matthew Henson. He spoke Eskimo. And he was Admiral Perry's navigator. And although he made it first to the pole, it never quite made it to the history books. And how about your heart? Can we get there? All right. Daniel Hale Williams first performed open heart surgery successfully. Now, this list could go on forever. Blacks who made it, blacks who made history, but who didn't get into the history text at all. And the strange thing is how little there is about us in the textbooks. Napoleon once said, history is a fable agreed upon, and the fable agreed upon up to now is that American history is white on white. Sometimes we did get into the history books. All wrong. Now you take this one. The Growth of the American Republic, 1942 edition. Samuel Eliot Morison, Henry Steele Cummager. Quote, as for. This has to do with slavery. As for Sambo, Professor Morison, Sambo, Professor Cummager, as for Sambo, whose wrongs moved the abolitionists to wrath and tears, there is some reason to believe that he suffered less than any other class in the South from its peculiar institution. Peculiar institution means slavery. Although brought to America by force, the incurably optimistic Negro soon became attached to the country and devoted to his white folks. Unquote. Those lines were written by two Pulitzer Prize-winning white Northern professors. Slavery. That's the place everybody likes to start Negro history. You have ignorant black men being brought over from Africa in chains. Terrible thing, slavery. But this way slavery is taught, it sort of takes the sting out of it. Because the way it's usually taught, people think that we Afro-Americans started with nothing but little grass skirts like the kids in the Tarzan movies. And though America gave us slavery, America kindly gave us religion and a lick or two of education. And when we get more jobs and more education, up from slavery. But we had something before we left Africa, something more than rhythm. I mean, we had a high culture. The culture was so high that great artists in the world are still borrowing from it. Now, if you tell the history of slavery right, you got a big problem on your hands. The slave trader didn't take some savage out of Africa. He took a human being. Sold him like an animal and separated him from his family. America invented the cruelest slavery in the history of the world because it broke up black families. After slavery was over, America kept breaking up the black man's family. And that's some awful history to teach. Now, if you want to look history right straight in the eye, you're going to get a black eye. Because it isn't important whether a few black heroes got lost or stolen or strayed in America's history textbooks. What's important is why they got left out. Now, this country has got a psychological history. There was a master race, and there was a slave race. And though there isn't any political slavery anymore, those same old attitudes have hung around. I mean, the burning part of Burn, Baby, Burn is right here in this classroom. We want to thank Mrs. Lovely Billups and the whole gang here at fourth grade for the brilliant and intelligent artwork that they've done here to make this whole broadcast sing. I want you guys to keep pretending that I'm not here. You're doing a great job, and just keep on drawing and reading and writing and doing what you have to do, because I'm going to talk about some other kids.
Okay, welcome back. I wanted to play that for you, and I actually edited it, and then I put the long version up there. I wanted to come back, actually, 3 minutes ago. But I'm happy you heard the long version. And I believe I still have enough time to take care of the second half of this study. How does that make you feel when you hear Bill Cosby speaking truth? You see, Bill Cosby knew what time it is. He knows what time it is. He knew what time it is, and he knows what time it is. I remember Bill Cosby being criticized a few years ago about him telling black people to wake up, and you know he was trying to tell us something, and the establishment shut him up. Have you heard from Bill Cosby lately? You know. Also, he endorsed the book. You know, he endorsed that book, Call to Glory. You know. Okay. Now, let me get to this. Now, have any of you heard the Tulsa riots in 1921? Have you heard that when, you know, they tell us that, you know, black people are just, you know, we don't know how to do business, or we're just stupid or whatever. You know, there's like, I think there was like 10 to 11,000 people that live in Oklahoma. They had a riot, a race riot. The United States government killed thousands of people, or hundreds, whatever numbers you want to say, hundreds or a thousand, you know, a lot of people. Mass graves. No one apologized to these people. People are still alive today. We don't even know about it because they don't even write about it in history books. You need to look this up. You can go on my site, go into my contact section, and play the video. I have the video up there so people can see it. And no one's looking at this video, but you need to look at it. I mean, this is tragedy. And America wonders why you're going through what you're going through today? Oh, yes. Price to be paid. Now, all right, now let me get to this now. Oh, my goodness, time is a flying. All right, now, before we go into this, now, I know this is going to offend those who are subscribing to the Egyptian religious movement. Okay? If this does offend you, I want you to know this is not my intention. But, okay, when people like Jordan Maxwell, the High Hawaiian, head of the Egyptian and, you know, antiquities, you know what I mean, the pawn of principalities, remember that guy, the one that's like head of all Egyptians antiquities, when this fool, you know, endorses this belief, you know, or with movies like Zeitgeist, you know, and even brothers like John Henry Clark. You know, because John Henry Clark said that the Hebrew history was like folklore, okay? Now, we have to ask a question, and that is, what is the root of all this confusion? Now, first, we have to understand that the Hebrew and the Hamites are deeply interlaced, all right? They're deeply interrelated. What I mean is that the Egyptian and the Hebrew have a very, very close relationship. For example, how many times did the Egyptians marry the Hebrews? Right? Think about this. Joseph married an Egyptian. Right? Hamite. Moses married an Ethiopian. Hamite. King Solomon's wife, his main wife, was daughter of Pharaoh. Hamite. Abraham had a child with Hagar, another daughter of a pharaoh, right? And then his wife, Ketar, okay? His wife, Ketar, another Hamite. These are like the patriarchs of the Hebrews. All of them married Hamitics, Egyptians. It's a close relationship, okay? And also, when the Israelites were usurped, Egypt was usurped as well. When they threw the Egyptians on the ship, they threw the Hebrews on the ship. So when you hear Moore saying, I am not a Hebrew, or brothers and sisters saying they are Egyptians, you know, an honest look at history would say, yeah, they're right. Okay? Because we're all here. Now, we have to stop and think about history. That's why I played that clip with Bill Cosby, because they've been manipulating history for a while. And we have to understand it and learn it. Now, what I want to do is speak about the Book of the Dead. All right? Now, here's a quick description of this book. Now, the Book of the Dead is the usual name given to the ancient Egyptian funerary text called Spells of Coming, or Going Forth by the Day. The Book of the Dead was intended to assist the deceased in the afterlife and comprised a collection of hymns, spells, and instructions to allow the deceased to pass through obstacles in the afterlife. The Book of the Dead was most commonly written on a papyrus scroll and placed in the coffin or burial chamber of the deceased. Books were often fabricated in funeral workshops and spaces being left for the name of the deceased to be written in later. They are often the work of several different scribes and artists whose work was literally pasted together. The cost of a typical book might be equivalent to a half a year's salary of a laborer. So the purchase would be planned well in advance of the person's death. The blank papyrus used for the scrolls often constituted the major cost of the work, so papyrus was often reused. The papyrus of Ani, okay, is a papyrus manuscript written in cursive hieroglyphics and illustrated with color, scripted in the 19th century, and the king back in 1240s. Now, the reason I'm reading this is to lay a foundation of the deception. Now, this little scroll, along with the Rosetta Stone, helped Egyptologists and atheists explain away the Creator. You know, people like Jordan Maxwell, the movie Zeitgeist. Remember the movie Zeitgeist, they talk about Egyptian and Horus and all these things? Like, we know there is a connection, but when you use that connection to discredit, we have to say, okay, well, let's see where this comes from, okay? Now, this is what I found. I found a documentary, actually, about 6 months ago, and I brought it so I can, I bought pieces of that documentary so I can show you from the documentary what exactly the Egyptian Book of the Dead is for those that don't know. And for those of you who are familiar with it, you really need to pay attention to this. Okay? Now, the History Channel, they did the documentary, and it's called Egyptian Book of the Dead, and it's produced by a production company called The Morning Star Entertainment. Okay? Now, I'm going to read a quick description of the movie. It says, it is about 1250 BCE. When they say BCE, it is before coming there. Okay, they go, the ancient Egyptians believe in a vast and intrinsic life after death. While the pharaohs built lavish pyramids to entomb their mummified remains, less prosperous Egyptians are also concerned with how they will spend eternity. Many of them invested half a year's salary or more to buy a Book of the Dead, a scroll which accompany them and be their guide to the afterlife. One such Egyptian is a temple scribe, something like a modern-day accountant, whose job it is to tally all the offerings made of the gods. A gift, now, as part of an educated group within the Egyptian elite, this scribe, whose name is Ani, has both the intellect and the time to ponder his place in the afterlife. In a dramatic reenactment, the Egyptian Book of the Dead shows Ani and his wife, Tutu, making the difficult decision whether to provide for the present or for eternity. Once the decision is made, the program demonstrates the effort and time that goes into crafting Ani's Book of the Dead, from the treating stalks of papyrus to constructing a scroll that will last for thousands of years without deterioration. I'll place this on my site once I get it all edited and everything, and then you can watch it for yourself, but you can do a search on it on the internet. Now, ask yourself, do you really know history? Do you really know Egyptian history? Or is this history that is what they want you to know? Now, I'm going to play a quick audio file. This is taken from the movie, and I'm going to play it for you. And this audio file is called The 42 Confessions and Moses Book. I'm sorry, The 42 Confessions and Moshe, Book of Ani, Part 1. I named it that because after you hear it, you'll see what I'm talking about. Okay, take a listen to this.
If the wandering soul followed the directions in the scroll, he would eventually find his way to a final challenge, the Hall of Judgment. Here he would face 42 separate gods in front of 42 separate doors. In front of each god, he would have to deny having committed a particular sin. It was one of the greatest challenges of the afterlife.
If you don't know the correct answers, the correct thing to say at this point, you presumably are not going to be able to get through that gate and pass successfully into the next life.
These 42 commandments that Ani would have to deny having broke are called the negative confessions.
It's a litany of things that the deceased didn't do. So he says, I did not go out and murder anybody. I didn't steal anything. I didn't fool around with somebody's wife. I didn't do this, that, and the other thing. It's very informative and revealing about what probably a lot of Egyptians did do.
But only through the spells in the Book of the Dead could a person make it through the negative confessions.
One should not confuse this with the notion of confession and repentance. This is really a magical incantation to wipe the board clean of whatever you might have done on earth.
One interesting fact is that most of the Ten Commandments can be found in the negative confessions. Could the Ten Commandments, written several hundred years after the Book of the Dead, be lifted from the negative confessions?
There's nothing in the Book of the Dead that says that there's only one God. There's nothing that says that only one God may be worshipped. However, almost all of the Ten Commandments, the things that are prohibited by the Ten Commandments, do appear in the Book of the Dead.
Egypt was the home of Moses. It's easy to see a variety of ways in which the Book of the Dead and Egyptian culture have influenced the Bible.
Whether or not the negative confessions are the source of the Ten Commandments, the Egyptians believed that a person must have lived a good life.
There are a lot of gods who would say, well, what did you do? And they would pose, it's almost like going through an exam, so they would pose test questions to the deceased to see if they had done right or wrong.
You have to open every gate. And these gates were not easy to enter. It was guarded with this huge scorpions, and you have to answer the questions or they will eat you.
Ani faced each god as detailed in the Book of the Dead. Gods with terrifying names like Swallower of Spirits and Breaker of Bones.
Awasif, Tira, Niana.
Anish Anata.
With each correct response from the Book of the Dead, Ani could move forward through the doors. Only after the final door could the soul of Ani meet the god Horus, the hawk-headed son of Isis and Osiris, who would escort Ani to his final test in the Hall of Judgment.
And then Ani would face the great scorpion and defeat him and fight Yoda. No, I'm just bugging. See, it's like a video game. You know what I'm saying? This is crazy. But now, they talk about Osiris. Pay attention to that name, Osiris. And do a study on Osiris if you don't understand. But I'm not going to explain Osiris because I don't have the time. So do some research on Osiris if you don't know the story about Osiris. But what you should also understand is that Osiris had a father named Amun. Okay? Now, this name, Amun, and Osiris, okay, they are actually mentioned in the book Yasser. They're mentioned in also the old scriptures, the Tanakh and the Torah and all these other things, because it's in the genealogy. But for this study, you know what I mean, it's very important to understand who Osiris and Anum was, because from this comes a lot of call. I see a call, but I got to handle this right now, and I'm actually talking on Skype, so leave a chat. Where was I? Osiris and Anum, they were related, okay? Now, before I get into that, I'm going to play another file, and I want you to hear this. This is a file that speaks about the Osiris, and let me see if I can find this for you. Okay, here we go. Now listen to this, okay?
The spread of belief in the afterlife affected more than just the newly emerging middle class. Some scholars say the Book of the Dead influenced Jewish and Christian scripture.
Ancient Christianity owes a great deal to ancient Egypt for its concept of heaven. This makes sense because most of the early Christian fathers were native Egyptians. And so when documents were being written concerning the nature and substance of the afterlife, since these things were not originally written in the Bible, the ancient Egyptians sort of filled in the blanks. The idea of spending one's afterlife with your loved ones in a pleasant place where you could do what you like is the same in both Christianity and in ancient Egyptian religion.
There's even a case to be made that the Egyptian Book of the Dead influenced New Testament and Christian religious imagery.
It's very clear when we study the history of the New Testament that, in fact, their main competition for the religion of Jesus was the religion of Isis and Osiris and their child, Horus. Many of the early figurations of the Virgin Mary sitting with baby Jesus on her lap are actually based on Isis statues, where Isis is holding Pharaoh, now her symbolic son.
One of the first people to notice the connection between the Book of the Dead and the Bible was Wallace Budge.
The fact remains the Egyptians did believe in one god. Osiris, who had lived upon the earth, had suffered a cruel death and had risen from the dead. There is no doubt that certain views and religious ideas of Christian sects may be traced directly to the Egyptians.
It's interesting to see how people's ethical beliefs and religious beliefs, no matter where they are from or what century they were sort of written in, all have a great deal in common.
When Wallace Budge arrived in Egypt in 1887, the country was controlled by a European coalition. Following a nationalist rebellion in 1882, Great Britain and France shared control of the country and the vital Suez Canal. Their coalition would control the politics and economy of Egypt for decades. But it was an uncomfortable union, and men like Budge didn't make the alliance any easier.
Okay, y'all heard the last part. You know, France and Great Britain controlled Egypt. Now, why is it that the European persuasion is always controlling the dark areas of our continent and taking the religion, and therefore we have conflation? Remember that word conflation in my study of Horus and all these other guys that are influencing Christianity, you know? And I'm not a subscriber of the present day Christianity anyway. So when they speak about this, you know, it's true. Yeah, there was a conflation there, but we have to understand that the Greeks went into Egypt 300 BC. The Greeks went into Jerusalem. You know the history between the Babylonians, the Persians, the Greeks, the Romans. They brought their gods in, and that influence became what it is today. Those of you that do not take this into consideration when you study Christianity, you are foolish. You have been destroyed for the lack of knowledge. This is why I said that prayer, to wake you up to understand that you have to understand what has happened to you. And if you don't, you are being fooled. Come out from amongst her. Time is short. Okay? Time is short. Okay? Okay, now, what I'm going to do, there's a chapter in the book of Yasser, which is called The Record of the Upright. All right? The book of record. The Record of the Upright. This book predates Moshe. This book was used by Abraham and Noah, okay? Because it's the book of record. Now, in this book, it tells about a peculiar person named Rikyon, and a king named Osiris, son of Anum. And if you do not know who Anum is, let me tell you about him. Now, any of you who have Bibles, turn to Genesis 10. And if you know this, then listen up. It says, and these are the sons of Ham, Cush, Mesraim, Phut, and Canaan, four sons. And the sons of Cush were Seba, Havilah, Sipata, Ramah, and Setacha. And the sons of Ramah were Sheba and Dedan. Remember Sheba? Okay. And the sons of Mizraim, which is Egypt, was Lun, Anum, and Pathras, Kaslaf, and Shaptura. Now, we all know that Mizraim is Egypt, okay? Now, he had a son named Anum, okay? Now, have you ever heard of the god Anum? Okay? Do your own imagination to understand how history is at work here and how names can be conflated, all right? Conflation, confusion, confliction, conflated, all right? Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you this chapter in the book of record, okay? The book of record, the book of the upright. Now, this is out of the book of Yasser. It's in chapter 14. Now, I want you guys to, if you have the time, go to my website, HebrewIsraelites.eu, click on the resource tab, and there's a book of Yasser. You can follow along with me. I'm just going to take me quick time to just read this really quick. All right, now it says, now pay attention, okay? In those days, there was in the land of Shinar a wise man who had understanding in all wisdom and of beautiful appearance. But he was poor and indigent, and his name was Rikyon, and he was hard set to support himself. Okay, wait, let me see which time I got. Okay, cool. He was hard set to support himself, okay? Now listen, and he resolved to go to Egypt to Osiris, the son of Anum, king of Egypt. Okay, Mesraim, Egypt, had a son named Anum. Anum had a son named Osiris who became the king of Egypt. You hear me? Now Rikyon is now, what is he doing? He went to Egypt to show the king his wisdom, for perhaps he might find grace in his sight to raise him up and give him maintenance. And Rikyon did so. Chapter 3. And Rikyon came to Egypt and asked the inhabitants of Egypt concerning the king, and the inhabitants of Egypt told him the custom of the king of Egypt. For it was then the custom of the king of Egypt that he went from his royal place and was seen abroad only one day in the year, and after that the king would return to his place and remain there. And on the day when the king went forth, he passed judgment in the land, and every one having a suit came before the king came for the king that day to obtain his request. And when Rikyon heard of the custom in the kingdom and that he could not come into the presence of the king, he grieved greatly and was very sorrowful. And in the evening, Rikyon went out and found a house in ruins, formerly a bakehouse in Egypt, and he abode there all night in bitterness of soul and pinched with hunger, and slept was removed from his eyes. Man was starving, okay? I went to bed hungry a lot of times, and I know the feeling. Okay, and Rikyon considered within himself what he should do in the town until the king made his appearance, and now he might maintain himself there. And he rose in the morning and walked about and met in his way those who sold vegetables and various sorts of seed which they supplied the inhabitants. And Rikyon wished to do the same in order to get a maintenance in the city, but he was unacquainted with the custom of the people, and he was like a blind man amongst them. And he went and obtained vegetables to sell them for his support, and the rabble assembly about him and ridiculed him, and a rabble assembled around him and ridiculed him and took his vegetables from him and left him with nothing. So they basically just robbed the brother. Okay, and he rose up from there in bitterness of soul and went sighing to the bakehouse in which he had remained all the night before, and he slept there the second night. Okay, and on the night again he reasoned with himself how he could save himself from starvation, and he devised a scheme how to act. Now, what was the scheme? And he rose up in the morning and acted ingeniously and went hired 30 strong men of the rebel. That's some word. Okay. Carrying their war instruments in their hands. And he led them to the top of the Egyptian sepulcher, and he placed them there. And he commanded them, saying, "Thus saith the king, strengthen yourself and be a valiant man, and let no man be buried here until 200 pieces of silver be given." 200 pieces of silver. And each person, that he might be buried, and those men did according to the order of Rakion to the people of Egypt the whole of the year. Okay, they did this for a whole year. And in 8 months' time, Rakim and his men gathered great riches of silver and gold, and Rakim took a great quantity of horses and of other animals, and he hired more men, and he gave them horses, and they remained with him. And when the year came around at the time, the king went forth into the town. All the inhabitants of Egypt assembled together to speak to him concerning the work of Rakim and his men. And the king went forth on the appointed day, and all the Egyptians came before him and cried unto him, saying, "May the king live forever. What is this that thou doest in the town to the servant, to thy servants, not to suffer a dead body to be buried until so much silver and gold be given?" Question: was there ever the like unto this done in the whole earth? For the days of former kings, ye even from this day, from the days of Adam unto this day, that the dead should not be buried unto for a set price. Now, mention how they said to the days of Adam. Okay, it's telling you that these are, they understand. This is from Noah. This is from Mithrin. You know what I'm saying? This is from Ham. You know what I mean? Anu, Osiris. All right. Now, we know it be the custom of the kings to take a yearly tax from the living. But thou dost not only do this, but from the dead also extract tax day by day. Now, O king, we can no more bear this, for the whole city is ruined on this account, and dost thou not know it? And when the king heard all that he had spoken, he was very wroth, and his anger burned within him at this affair, for he had nothing to do with it. And the king said, "Who and where is he that dares do this wicked thing in my land without my command? Surely you tell me." And they told him all the works of Rakim and his men. And the king's anger was aroused, and he ordered Rakim and his men to be brought before him. And Rakim took about 1,000 children, sons and daughters, and clothed them in silk and embroidered. And he set them upon horses and sent them to the king by means of his men. And he also took a great quantity of silver and gold and precious stones and a strong and beautiful horse as a present for the king, with which he came before the king and bowed down to the earth before him. And the king, his servant, and all the inhabitants of Egypt wondered at the work of Rakim, and they saw his riches and the presents that he had brought to the king. And it greatly pleased the king, and he wondered at it. And when Rakim sat before him, the king asked him concerning all his works. And Rakim spoke all his words wisely before the king, his servants, and all the inhabitants of Egypt. And when the king heard the words of Rakim and his wisdom, Rakim found grace in the sight, and he met his grace and kindness from all the servants of the king and from all the inhabitants of Egypt, on account of his wisdom and excellent speech, and from that time they loved him exceedingly. Okay? And coming to the end. And the king answered and said unto Rakim, "Thy name shall no more be," this is in verse 27, and the king answered and said unto Rakim, "Thy name shall no more be called Rakim, but Pharaoh shall be thy name, since thou didst exact a tax from the dead, and he called his name Pharaoh. Okay? And the king and his subjects loved Rakan for his wisdom, and they consulted with all the inhabitants of Egypt to make him perfect under the king. And all the inhabitants of Egypt and its wise men did so, and was made a law in Egypt. Now it's a law, okay? And they made Rakan Pharaoh perfect under Osiris, king of Egypt, and Rakan Pharaoh governor over Egypt. Okay, he daily administration justice to the whole city. But Osiris the king would judge the people of the land one day in a year when he went out to make his appearance. Okay, so he left Rakan in charge. I mean, which is the Pharaoh now, right? And Rakan, listen to this one. And Rakan, Pharaoh, cunningly usurped the government of Egypt and extracted a tax from all the inhabitants of Egypt. And all the inhabitants of Egypt greatly loved Rakan, Pharaoh, and they made a decree to call him, and they made a decree to call every king they should reign, that should reign over them and their seed in Egypt, Pharaoh. Therefore, all the kings that reigned in Egypt from that time forward were called pharaohs unto this day. And that's the end of the 14th chapter. Now, I read that to you because I want you to understand something. As I was doing my research, I was looking at when this Book of the Dead came into existence and how it evolved into what it is today, and how Rakan devised a plan to not allow people to bury the dead for gold and silver, and how he acquired so much money that the king didn't care what he did. The king was like, whoa, this man has made money on this. All right. And how that when money was made on this, okay, Osiris became not just a king, he became a king of the dead. Because now Pharaoh is giving reverence to Osiris. Because remember, he usurped the kingdom. So if Rakan, who became Pharaoh, usurped the kingdom, how is he going to do this? You know, he has to tell the people somehow that Osiris probably went away to the sky and he is now a god. Because when you mix death in with this, now you have to make it more spiritual. And as time goes on and things become evolved, things change. Then there's Osiris, and then there's the god Anum. Okay? Now, I want you to do some research and really pull this out and understand and read this chapter for yourself and see where the first Pharaoh came in and how he came in to be. Okay, now I'm going to play one more thing for you. It's I call it Show Me the Money. All right, now listen to this, okay? And then we're going to close out on something. Close out on this study. All right, listen up.
The priests of the temples helped a person choose which spells would be needed in the afterlife.
Ephermut, Wifash, Huit Kabi. Nanirwat Ashit Tuwat Hat. Ephermat, Viterwad, Amodhod, Amit. Tumad, Kuhed Yoso. Anyat, Aminti. Fez Hamanan, Amulit, Tanuch.
I sometimes wonder if these Book of the Dead didn't start out in some ways as a little extra moonlighting for money. Once you convince all the rich people that they just have to have this thing, then, I mean, the sky is the limit in how much you could charge.
The creation of one's very own Book of the Dead may also have been a status symbol.
And the Book of the Dead would have been quite expensive for any ordinary person to afford. And in fact, we can see this play out archaeologically. We find that the Book of the Dead is only possessed by members of the elite.
This was very different from the earliest days of Egyptian culture. Originally, mummification and an afterlife among the gods was reserved for the pharaoh only.
I wanted to play that because this documentary is actually, video is actually, you know, speaking positive of this. And even they concluded that this was like a money-making scheme, okay? And if it matches with what Chapter 14 explains, because Chapter 14 explains that it started out as a way of making money. It started out as a way of making money, and then it evolved into making these elaborate, papyrus scrolls like the scroll of Ani, and he actually paid like, you know, half a year's salary for one of these things, and they had it like separate with the elite had certain ones, and then, you know, go through this for, you know, a couple hundred to a thousand years, and you see how things become evolved. Now, I'm going to read, I actually have a little bit of time. So who is Anum, the father of Osiris? Okay? Now, I'm going to read this. It's it says, when the army of the founder of the 18th dynasty expelled the Hyksos ruler from Egypt, okay, the victor's city of origin, Thebes, became the most important city in Egypt. The capital of the new dynasty, the local patron deity of Thebes was Amun, therefore became nationally important. The pharaohs of that newly dynasty attributed all their successful enterprises to Anu, and they lavished much of their wealth and captured spoil on the construction of temples and dedicated to Amun. The cultural advances achievements by the pharaohs of this dynasty brought Egypt into a cultural renaissance, restoring trade and advancing archaeological design to levels that would not be achieved by any other culture for thousands of years. As Egyptians considered themselves oppressed during the period of the Hyksos rule, the victory accomplished by Pharaoh worshipping Amun was seen as a champion of the less fortunate. Consequently, Anum was viewed as upholding the rights of justice for the poor by aiding those who traveled in his name. He became the protector of the road since he upheld Mahat, truth, justice, and goodness. Those who prayed to Amun were required first to demonstrate that they were worthy by confessing their sins. Voltaire Stella from the... Oh, that's just the thing. And it says... okay, here we go. This is the part that I want to get. Amun, who comes to the voice of the poor in distress, who gives breath to him who is... wretched, you are Anum, the Lord of the Silent, who comes at the voice of the poor when I call to you in my distress. You come and rescue me. Thou, thy servant, was disposed to do evil. The Lord is disposed to forgive. The Lord of Thebes spent not a whole day in anger. His wrath passed in a moment. None remains. He breathes, his breath comes back to us in mercy. May you come. Be kind. May you forgive, it shall not be again. That's some prayer they wrote, they said to the man, the God. Now, here is the last part. It says, much later, because of the evidence of the adoration given to Amun in many religions during the height of his cult, Greek travelers to Egypt would report that Amun, who they determined to be the ruler of the Egyptian pantheon, was similar to the leader of the classical Greek pantheon, Zeus. Okay? And therefore, they became identified by the Greeks as the same deity. Likewise, Amun's consorts, Mut, became associated by these Greeks with Zeus' consorts in the classical pantheon, Hera. Now, what better way to honor your father than to make him a god? You understand? See, what we're seeing here is a evolution. I don't like using that word evolution, but it's a good word. An evolution. And then how it evolved into gods and worship based on things that happened in history. You know, the son of Mitzrayim, Amun, now is a god. The son Osiris is now a god. Raikyan becomes a pharaoh based on him manipulating the dead. And now we have the Ten Commandments. Now, if you were to think that the Ten Commandments come from this, then you really need to look at history. The Ten Commandments that they take from this, all right? Now, I have a list of the 42, they call it the 42 Negative Confessions. And, you know, it says, here's a couple. It says, I have not done wrong. I have not robbed. I have not stolen. I have not killed people. I have not destroyed food offerings. I have not reduced the measures. I have not stolen God's property. I have not told lies. I have not stolen food. I have not, you know what I mean? Come on. There's 42 of these. And if you look at my website, HebrewIsraelites.eu, you will notice that I have also 613 commandments. Okay, now there's 613 commandments that they have found there throughout the old scriptures. Now, can you get 613 from 42? Or can you get 42 from 613 if we really want to play the who got who from what game? But we're not going to play that game because we don't need to. Now, if you understand that the Ten Commandments, the first five commandments, they don't mention because those are dealing with the covenant. The last five commandments are common laws that you can find in any civilized society. You should not steal. You should not a lie. You know, you should not cheat. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Thou shalt not commit adultery. I mean, you go into a court of law. Anywhere in the United States, if you commit any of these laws, you will suffer consequences. So we have to stop being ignorant on this issue and understand that the manipulation has been at play here, but we have to ask ourselves, who is doing the manipulating? And I always fall back to the fallen angels or the demonic forces. And these demonic forces have conflated things. Okay? They conflated things. They are manipulating these forces. Do you think it's an accident that movies like Zeitgeist or Jordan Maxwell are coming up with a blending of all these ancient traditions into now? So when people that don't have a strong faith will look at this and say, wow, Christianity is nothing but this, which of course, you know, to an extent it is. But if you don't know history, your faith will be rocked. Your faith will really be rocked if you don't understand what happened. Now, what you need to know is that, you know, I'm going to do a really deep study on Christianity. What you have to understand is that the history of Christianity is very scary when you know how much they have stolen, influenced, destroyed. What really is left of it? You have to go back to the Hebrew. You have to understand who the priests are. You have to know who these people are. You know? I mean, time is running short. I give the United States another 6 months, 2 years before it's totally just done. And I'm not saying that as like fear-mongering, but Babylon, they said, where's America in the Bible? America is Babylon, okay? The whole system is Babylon. They're trying to save themselves now with this new world order. But they ain't going to save themselves. It has a short time limit on it. Very short time limit on it. And if you look at, this call, I wish I knew how to answer this call. Oh, anyway, look it. Let me finish out. In conclusion, okay, going back to the start of this program, okay, I mentioned Hello, caller. Let me see if I can answer. Let me see. 1 second. No. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I was listening to your conversation.
Okay. Do you still want to speak? Are you just listening?
Yeah, I was listening to your conversation. And first, my name is Pianchi. I'm
Hello,
from here in the Midwest mm-hmm. of the United States.
Okay.
But, you know, I was listening to the things that were being said, especially on those clips. Those things that's being said on those clips of, as far as the history of ancient Kemetic people
mm-hmm.
is all bungled up. Osiris is the Greek name for Asar, and Asar was one of the Aeneid, and his father was Geb. It was not, what did you say, Amon?
Mm-hmm.
I guess you think of it. No, his father was not Amon. He was the product of the coming together of Geb and his wife, and that's what created. Now, the first triad, Asar, Aset, and Heru, which was the triad of, you know, at one period of time in Kitchen. There was many triads, but they weren't the only one. But it said that those individuals were real live people that came out of what's now called Ethiopia, back then was called Cush.
Mm-hmm.
It was people that was eventually, that was Lenin have been deified. And, you know, you mentioned about the 42 negative confessions. At one time, it was over 42, 147 of them.
Okay.
You can find them, you can see those today, written in stone in a tomb there in Saqqara called the Tomb of Menelusi. I've studied in from Cairo down to Abu Simbel. For the last 8 years, this past summer I didn't go. But a lot of the things that we've been told, you know, there's no, I mean, it's just totally mixed up. But, you know, I just wanted to say something. You know, I know you can stay on to after you go off. And apparently you've done a lot of study. I wanted to bring up one point,
mm-hmm.
which is about the Hebrews. And how things in the Bible have been changed. And this is a historical person who was a Kushite king.
I got 7 minutes, brother. I gotta conclude pretty soon.
Yeah, this is about the Kushite king, Taharqa. You know, Taharqa took a military army into the area of what was then at that time called Canaan, and now Israel, Palestine. And defeated the Assyrians, which was led by Sennacherib, in around 701. And if you look at 2 Kings 19 and 35, where it says that this was done by the angel of the Lord, that wasn't the angel of the Lord, but that was within the last 100 years where they removed the name Taharqa.
Okay.
And Taharqa went and saved his kissing kin, who were titled Hebrews, and they were calling Yahwehism, who learned their God was Yahweh at that time, nothing more than a, you know, God didn't have an importance, no power. The Assyrians was following. I'm sure Assyrians was one of the strongest military forces at that time. But when those Kushites came out of, you know, northern Sudan and southern Ethiopia, they were following the god Amun. And they, in fact, defeated the Syrians, you know, twice in history, not only in 701, but, a later period. So that story is true. You can see where the Hebrews were allowed to come down into Aswan by Taharqa and reside there on Elephantine Island, which is called Bega Island. before they went, they stayed there. Then they now located in Gondor, which is one of the towns there in Ethiopia. People have called them the Better Israel. There was a group of people that was involved in that operation where they was airlifted back to Israel. And
okay, brother,
called Solomon.
Brother, I have to cut you off real quick. The show's about to end soon, and I need to close out.
I can hang on until after the show if you want to, and we can discuss this a little bit further.
Actually, I have to, it's like 12 o'clock at night, and I got to go to school tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
I need to do something. But what's your name again?
My name is Pianka. Where are you located at?
I'm in Sweden right now. Pianka.
Oh.
And do you have a blog talk show?
No, I don't have no blog talk show. I just kind of hang out on these here every time when I don't have much to do.
Do me a favor. Befriend me so we can pick up discussion later, okay? But thank you so much for your information,
right,
brother.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, my man. I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm just going to finish out, okay?
Okay, that'll be fine.
Okay. All right. Let me see. How do I... No. Okay, just hanging there. All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, in conclusion, okay, now going back to the Los Lunas Decalogue, the commandment rock. Now, if the covenant was broken, you have to ask yourself, would this stone exist? All right? The scattering of the people, was that a curse or a blessing for the earth? Understand, you see, we are at the right moment in time of where we are supposed to be. The covenant of Israel was not broken. The covenant of the Hebrew Israelites was not broken. If you remember what I said, Israel means he turns the head of Yah. And in the verse where it says, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and I will forgive their sins and I will heal their land. Okay? Israel, he turns the head of Yah. See, the covenant was not broken, Israel. The covenant still remains. Okay? Think about the covenant that was made with Abraham. Promised the seed of Israel. It says, unto thee, thy seed, have I given this land, from the river Egypt into the river, unto the rivers. And he talks about the rivers from Canaanites, the Hittites, the Cushites. Now the Ashkenazis are not the seed. The Sephardics are not the seed. Okay? He says, I will heal their land. You know what I'm saying? The scripture says he will heal their land. Abraham did not break the covenant. The covenant was made to Israel to become the priest of the Most High. Peculiar people. The nation. Okay? But we can become this again. Because Israel means he turns the head of Yah. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time I have right now. I will have another broadcast coming soon. I want to thank that brother for calling in and giving us more knowledge about Egypt. And like I said, we all need a lesson in history. And it still does not change, though, the history of the Hebrew Israelite. We really have to study on this. Thank you so much for coming. My name is Dawi Yaakov Maccabeus. Visit HebrewIsraelites.eu. Go to the resource page, and you will find information there. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and I am signing
out.
And this is the poem that I always close every reading of mine. After this poem, I read no more. Strong men. Strong men. The strong men keep coming on. Carl Sandburg. They dragged you from homeland. They chained you in coffles. They huddled you, spoon fashion, in filthy hatches. They sold you to give a few gentlemen ease. They broke you in like oxen. They scourged you. They branded you. They made your women breeders. They swelled your numbers with bastards. They taught you the religion they disgraced. You sang, keep inching along like a poet's worm. You sang, by and by I'm gonna lay down this heavy load. You sang, walk together, chillin'. Don't you get weary. The strong men keep a-coming on. The strong men get stronger. They point with pride to the road you built for them. They ride in comfort over the rails you laid for them. They put hammers in your hands and said, drive so much before sundown. You sang, ain't no hammer in this lane. Strikes like mine, baby. Strikes like mine. They cooked you in their kitchen. They penned you in their factories. They gave you the jobs that they were too good for. They tried to guarantee happiness to themselves by shunting dirt and misery to you. You sang, me and my baby gonna shine, shine. Me and my baby gonna shine. The strong men keep a-coming on.